Okay, and this is Talk Radio. I'm Marianne Barisonic, and my guest is Nobel laureate Jody Williams. What do you think, listeners? What does the peace movement or the anti-nuclear movement need to do right here in Portland to get a more coordinated front? The phone number to call is 503-231-8187. It seems like the people who are putting things together like nuclear weapons and nuclear power plants present such a united front, and then the rest of us that are fighting it kind of are scattered. Yeah, exactly.
I have said this in every speech I've given on civil society and the nuclear issue, so saying it again here is not new, but hopefully to a new audience. The NGOs that have worked on nuclear issues for decades have kind of set up their own turf, if you know what I mean, their own area, their own vision of themselves as experts and, you know, the ones that will change the world on this, instead of recognizing that one little NGO or one individual cannot change the world, period.
Well,
I don't care who you are. And if they don't recognize that they have to give up a little of their own, you know, turf, their own worrying about having their name be prominent and work collectively, it's going to be that much harder.
That was the way you ran the landmine campaign, wasn't it? And then the irony is, of course, that you get the Nobel Prize, and in a way that sets you up as the person who did it, when in actuality it was a whole lot of organizations.
Well, it wasn't just me that got the prize. It was, half of it was given to me and half was given to the International Campaign to Ban Landmines, in recognition that we were thousands of people around the world, millions of people, thousands of NGOs working on this issue. I was recognized individually because I had actually started it. But I don't speak of me. I speak of we. I never have thought that I did this alone. And when I started putting together the campaign, you know, convincing non-governmental organizations to be part of it, I was clear that my function was coordinating, that my function was, once these NGOs agreed to join the campaign, giving them all the same information all the time so that together we would advance and reach our goal of banning landmines. Information is power. If I had kept it all to myself, obviously I would have been the linchpin, and if anything happened to me, the campaign would have struggled, right?
Right, it would have fallen apart.
Yeah, I never saw it that way. It was my job to make sure everybody knew what the other campaigns were doing, so that then, for example, if the French campaign had a success with their government, I'd send out, you know, information to everybody else and say, look at what the French campaign was able to do with their government. They got Mitterrand to agree to not export for 3 years. See if you can use that to put pressure on your government to get them to do the same. And then, then the campaigns set up competition between the governments to be the best government. But if you don't share that information regularly, you handicap every organization in the movement. The nuclear groups do not do that.
So, Jody, what do you think of the bombing in Libya? How do you think that should have been handled?
That is a really tough one. I have very conflicted feelings about so-called humanitarian intervention. You probably know that it's been a hot point of discussion for many years now, whether the so-called international community should intervene to protect civilians in situations like Libya, or situations like Darfur, or situations like Burma. I just find it quite curious that the one they intervene on is Libya, where there's tons of oil.
Right.
Whenever the U.S. is leading the charge on such issues or such interventions, I get extremely worried. because the U.S. has intervened in too many countries in the world since the Monroe Doctrine, and before we did steal Mexico, half of it. But when the U.S. is leading, I just cannot not imagine the ulterior motives there. And who do they, you know, who do they know in the rebel groups? Have they ever interacted with these people? I just, it causes me more angst than it makes me feel terrific that they're supposedly saving civilians.
Right. I think that's been a big quandary here in the, I know, in the peace community in Portland, because there's some people who are saying, well, you know, it was a good idea. We're going to save lives. And others who are saying, no, dropping bombs on people is not going to save lives.
Right.
And so I want to alert listeners that on Monday morning on More Talk Radio from 8 to 9, we're going to have a discussion between two local peace activists. Host Cecil Prescott will speak with Reverend Chuck Curry, who believes that the bombing of Libya was a good idea, and peace vet Joe Walsh, who is going to be back out on the bridges with signs. Now, Jody, you're going to be in town here for two appearances.
Yes.
One of them is a dinner for the Physicians for Social Responsibility. They're having their anniversary dinner on Friday, April 15th at 6 p.m. Uh-huh. at the Oregon Zoo. And the other event, I know it's in this press release somewhere.
Let me see. I might have information here, but I'm getting up to go find it.
Okay. Anyway, the Physicians for Social Responsibility had a peace writing contest, and they had students from across the state answer the question, what do we need to change to create a world without nuclear weapons? So I'm going to put that out there to our listeners.
I have found the other things that I'm going to be doing.
Okay, excellent.
There's a student peace summit that I will be speaking at Concordia University, and then there'll be a lecture that evening from 7 to 8:30 at the Hagen Center at Concordia, and I'll be speaking and taking questions. I don't like to preach at. I'd like to converse with, you know, people who come. So, yeah, it'll be fun.
Okay, and I think we're going to open up the phone lines for callers.
Sure.
Good morning, Joanne.
Yes, hello. Jody, thank you for coming to Portland.
Sure.
And, I had a couple of questions. Yeah, first, I think, I don't have the answer in the problems in organizing and uniting, but one thing I have noticed a lot in my life, whether it's with organizing or in families and that, is a big problem in a lot of things is the human ego. I think that gets in the way of a lot of healthy energy that might be happening. And I wanted to ask, but it's not important, whether Concordia University is a religious university. And also one last thing, you know, Princess Diana, I've been wondering whether her death might have something to do with her work with landmines. But anyway, whatever you want to respond to, I'll get off the program.
Okay, thank you for your call, Joanne.
I think your point about ego is very well taken. Certainly ego is an issue. I think that was what I was trying to say when I was talking about some of the nuclear NGOs and their turf. It's sort of like collective ego, right? I'm an NGO that has worked on nuclear issues for 30 years. I know, you know, what needs to be done. I know how it needs to be done. And I want to be the leader instead of I want to be part of a collective movement that can really deal with this issue. It's a collective ego. We had issues with individuals with ego, of course, but I chose to ignore them, quite honestly, and just act like they were like everybody else, give them the same information as everybody else, and just refused to deal with that aspect of human nature, and for the most part, it worked.
Right. The irony, I think, in there is that the right, which presents such a united front, a lot of times it's because there is one individual, but they're powerful enough that because they have a lot of money.
I was just going to say, I think what unites them is the desire for money and power.
And
so whether or not there's a strong individual, I don't think really matters. They all want money. They all want power, so they're willing to do what they have to do to get it.
Right. And you would think that wanting something like a nuclear-free world would be enough to unite people on the other side.
You would think, except it's pretty easy. It's shockingly easy, let me put it that way, for people to convince themselves that they're doing it for patriotism instead of money. I once met with a man who was involved in a company that produced landmines. And I tried to talk to him about what landmines did after the end of war, which made them so reprehensible. And he immediately got very agitated and said to me he did not want to discuss ideological issues. It's like, excuse me, sir, I'm giving you facts about what happens when the war ends and the landmines keep killing. That is not ideology. He wanted to hide behind the belief that these weapons protected our soldiers. The thing they say about every weapon in the world in order to cut off conversation about why some of them are reprehensible and should be banned.
Right.
That's a very common tactic. Regarding Concordia's, whether it's religious or not, I have no clue. I'm coming out to speak. I don't know.
Okay, and Princess Diana, was her work on the landmines something that did her in?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. It wasn't that important.
Okay, and we've got another caller.
Uh-huh.
DJ, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Barely.
Okay.
And you're echoing. Are you on a speakerphone?
Yeah, I took it off. I'm afraid to go outside. There might be a landmine out there.
Oh, I don't think so.
But courageous people like yourself that speak out, and I wanted to know the date and the time that was coming up over Concordia. Where is that?
The lecture in the evening?
Yes, ma'am.
Here, I'll get up again and look. It is on Friday, April 15th.
15th.
No, it isn't. It's, hang on, I'm really sorry.
Or anything else you're doing here in town.
It's Thursday, April 14th from 7 p.m. to 8:30 at Concordia in the Hagen Center on the second floor.
Uh-huh, that's a little room in the back they got you in.
Well, that's all right.
Okay.
I don't care. I'm very flexible.
Yeah, maybe we could put a tent up out in front.
That if five people come, we'll chat. If 50 yeah. people come, we'll chat. I don't really care.
In the Army, that was my job, putting up big tents, medic tents for doctors. MASH.
Uh-huh.
I was a MASH doctor, MASH person.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I saw a lot of it, and we had to really be careful where you went, and
yep.
you had no way of knowing. And the ego, as one of the callers said, is really one of the big problems. I myself have it, being in the Army. You had to be strong, macho, out there pushing, conquer, get the enemy, so forth, whatever enemy. You know, it turned out I never saw many enemies, but they were there,
yep.
I guess,
yep.
you know. But the point is, good people like these people that have been murdered, Princess Di, and so on, are trying to do good things, and many, many, I mean, MLK, of course, and my goodness, the list goes on.
Mm-hmm.
I just saw an incredible movie in England. I could see some of the problems that developed for the Aussie, the Australian elocutionist, linguist that saved George VI of the York, the Duke of York, you know, became George VI.
Do you have a question, caller?
Yeah, I would like to see what could we do to help as people here. Is it just coming
US?
As the people? I mean, I'm just one
sure.
of the persons.
You could put pressure on the U.S. government to sign the mine ban treaty, which they still have not done. It's rather mind-boggling that the U.S. is not on board. I actually thought Obama would come on board when he became president because we have not used landmines since the first Gulf War, way back at the beginning of the 90s. We have not exported them since 1992. We haven't produced them since the middle of the 90s, and we've already started destroying U.S. stockpiles. So, you know, we're essentially obeying the treaty. Why not join it?
Do you get any sort of answer from government officials on that question?
No, right now Obama's administration is, quote-unquote, reviewing the issue, which I find, you know, some of my colleagues in the landmine campaign get aggravated at my cynicism, but there's no need to review it. It was reviewed under Clinton. It has been said by many, many military, including 13 former generals and admirals, etc., in an open letter to the president that they did not need landmines, that it was both humane and militarily responsible to ban them. 67 members of the Senate sent a letter to Obama saying that they supported the treaty. That's what you need for ratification. You know, I don't get it.
Well,
Obama needs to hear from people like the caller and others that Americans want this treaty to be ratified by the United States of America. We haven't used them, so let's do the right thing and outlaw them.
Okay, and good morning, Jennifer.
Hello. I was wanting to touch on the comment made about the power ego dynamic and money. And what I think is like the healing balm with people realizing how we're impacted by everything that happens on the planet, how we're impacted by how we treat each other, how we think about each other, how literally how we move about the planet. And I think that kind of, that can shift how power is understood. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, you know, definitely what you're talking about while you're here in Portland. And I just wanted to say thank you for giving of yourself and your time and your passion and creating this open forum to just allow some more thought in how to imagine power as being personal but very much moved by how people see and understand that how we touch each other has a profound impact on how peace is actually a reality.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your call.
I look forward. I hope I meet you.
Thank you. Peace. Bye-bye.
Jody, one of the things I was wondering about, in February and March of 2007, you had led a mission to Darfur for the UN Human Rights Council. How have the changes in places like Libya and Egypt and Bahrain affected the situation in Darfur?
Well, I think what's more affecting the situation in Darfur is the referendum result in South Sudan. Earlier this year, there was a referendum in South Sudan asking the citizens whether they would wish to become an independent state or remain within the Sudan. Okay? Everybody expected, and what did happen was the overwhelming majority voted to become an independent state. Since that time, there has been more violence in Darfur. Again, there have been, you know, clashes along the border between what will be the new state and old Sudan. And I think that's had much more of an impact than what the other things that are happening throughout Northern Africa and the Middle East. Certainly there have been some protests in Khartoum, the capital of Sudan, but I think they're still much more focused on the huge internal dynamics.
Okay, and we've got another caller. Good morning, Mitch.
Yeah, good morning. Those landmines, you hear about these innocent people that step on them by mistake and just wanting to go out and plow their fields or whatever. I mean, it's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any comparison to the death rate of those landmines to, say, depleted uranium? What's going on with our military? And I also just wanted to ask if you believe that Barack Obama, a.k.a. Barry Satoru, is really in charge, or that the change that he is making is against America. And I'll listen offline. Thanks.
I honestly don't know any stats on depleted uranium, so it would be bogus and irresponsible of me to say anything. I think Obama is as in charge as any president in this in the history of the country. The issue is that the U.S. is, the executive branch, Congress, and the judiciary, along with all of the bureaucracy that stays there, no matter who's president or no matter who's in the Senate or the Congress. I think he has a vision for this country that many people support and many don't, but that's what democracy is, in my view. Although we seem to have lost something in the democracy in America, in my view, in the last 20 or so years, in that we no longer think about the common good. It's always, advancing either this party's agenda or that party's agenda, and I think that does us all harm. I don't care who the president is.
Okay, and Rhonda, good morning.
Good morning. It's really a pleasure to be able to hear you, Jody, this morning, and I look forward to meeting you when you're here in Portland. Concordia College is home to the Holistic Peace Institute.
Uh-huh.
And Gary Spanovich, who directs that, works with Nobel laureates on peace issues. And
that's why I'm coming. Coming there. Actually, he and his institute are one of the sponsors of my coming out there.
Right. So one of your callers, I think, wanted to know if Concordia was a religious institution,
uh-huh.
but I believe, and I'm not sure either if they're affiliated in that way, but I do know that the Holistic Peace Institute is, very forward-thinking and trying to bring peace education into our schools in Oregon, so they're doing good work.
Great. I think we need peace education everywhere, not just in Oregon.
Amen.
Amen.
So I have a question for you, and that is I heard you on the Colbert Report, where you held your own very nicely.
Thank you. It was fun.
Fun to watch. And you talked about your work with the other women Nobel laureates, and I wondered whether there has been a suggestion that that group bring their peaceful power to the issue of intimate violence, or what it's called sometimes domestic violence, or women's issues around violence. And I'll just take my answer off the air.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Bye-bye.
We're actually looking at exploring getting more involved in issues of violence against women during conflict, such as what's happening in Mexico in the so-called war on drugs and the obvious conflicts in Darfur and et cetera, et cetera. But if we were to do that, I would want to expand the thinking to include domestic violence, because I think it is all a continuum, right? Whether it's people beating up their spouses at home or violence against women in Mexico or violence against women during conflict, it's because of the view of women as lesser beings. It's because women's rights are not, viewed the same as men's rights. It's because of macho and all sorts of things. And to deal with violence, whether it's, in conflict or systemically, you have to deal with all aspects of it. So that's my feeling.
Right, or the idea that the way that we solve problems is the first thing is
hit somebody
or throw a bomb at them.
Exactly.
Why do you think it is that so many Americans seem so apathetic? I mean, there's so much going on in the world, and there's a large number of people who don't like the way things are going, and yet there's not a very big groundswell of activism.
Well, I don't disagree with what you're saying, and yet I do speak quite a bit at you know, with young people at universities and Peace Jam, another organization I work with, and they are inspired to action. You know, I think there's a sense, as you say, that people aren't active, but I really believe there is a growing understanding of the only way to change the world is to be active. I think what happens here is a combination of things, one of which is we have really bad media. I mean, most people read,
right.
I call it McNewspaper, or they listen to Fox News, and I'm sorry, I consider it to be extremely biased, very limited. And what has become news in America is following celebrities, not things that really matter in our life. Who cares what Charlie Sheen does?
Well, I think Britney Spears' new hairstyle is far more important than what people... right, exactly. What's going on with the latest anti-nuclear campaign.
Exactly. Another issue, too, though, is I think the way news and issues are presented today make people feel overwhelmed. You know, because we are constantly flooded with 24 hours of so-called news, it seems like there's trouble everywhere in the world on every single issue, and if we can't make it all better all at once, why bother, because nothing will ever change. Instead of helping people understand that it's the little actions that everybody takes cumulatively that bring about change.
Okay.
Which is, you know, how we viewed it in the Landmine campaign. If everybody in the campaign did their little bit, all together we would be able to change the world, and we did. So part of what I try to do is help people understand that the things that they do matter. That if everybody who wanted to change the world, just imagine this, if even all they did was volunteer a couple hours a month at some organization working on the issue that most upsets them, I don't care what it is, it can be gender issues, it can be violence against women, it can be climate change, it can be whatever it is. Education in the country, democracy in America, I don't care. But if everybody volunteered, imagine what we could do in this world. It doesn't take that much energy, but you have to get up off your butt and do it. Worrying does not change the world. Taking action helps change the world.
Okay, and this is Talk Radio on KBOO. I'm Marianne Barasonic, and my guest is Nobel laureate Jody Williams. So what is your vision of national security? And callers, I'm putting this out to you, too. What is a vision of national security, and how can we achieve real security?
I think national security is an outmoded way of looking at the world. We live in a globalized world, obviously. I mean, if the Twin Towers can be attacked the way they were, if disease can fly around the planet with amazing speed, all the things that happen globally, you know, social networks, et cetera, those are a different idea of what the world is. Those are a different reality today than, you know, the view of nation states that was created in the 1600s, where, you know, each powerful isolated nation was striving to be the most militarily powerful and or the most politically powerful, et cetera. And because they were each isolated, more or less, that made sense. Nothing's isolated today. So for each state, nation state, to still try to be the preeminent military power in today's world, to me, is insane. And we have to, as a nation, stand up and stop spending over half of our budget on the military. Every time I look at the paper, and I see billions more cuts in education, billions more cuts in health care, billions more cuts in social services, at the same time that the military is still getting over half of our tax dollars, I cannot understand it.
Well, I think the levers are broken, and we no longer seem to have any sort of influence over what the government's doing.
That's because we need to take back democracy in America and take it back by no longer allowing corporations to buy campaigns. I find it appalling that the Supreme Court of the United States said that corporations can put as much money as they want into campaigns. And to call that a democracy? That if some other country did that, and then many do, we call that corruption.
Yeah. Okay, and we've got another caller. Good morning, George.
Hi. I just wanted to mention one other women's issue, the massive global trafficking for purposes of sexual exploitation of, mm-hmm. Of women, and the domestic, the same issue domestically also.
Mm-hmm. It is a huge issue. Absolutely. Thanks for bringing it up. Trafficking of people is huge. Trafficking of, you know, women and girls for the sex trade is huge.
It's mostly women, yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for bringing it up. It's another issue that people who really care about that can work on.
Yeah, it is. It's a huge issue, and it is wrapped up in war because uh-huh. apparently once an area has been hit by a war, the trafficking in women increases.
Uh-huh. It's also wrapped up in poverty. You know, sometimes in incredibly poor villages, people will sell their daughters to traffickers because they need money. I mean, it's a combined, you know, many, many factors lead to trafficking. But yes, war is a huge one.
I kind of wanted to get back to that issue of we were talking about the Supreme Court changing the rules on the corporate free speech, which is kind of like opening the doors to the money going into campaigns. And that's a really interesting issue because, like, the last time I saw some numbers on this, something overwhelmingly like 80% of the people in the U.S. are against this policy. Mm-hmm. But there it is. And it's like this is a piece of that broken mm-hmm. government that we have where no matter what most of the people feel, the policies go into place.
That's because people, you know, you can't sit around your living room and talk to others about it. You have to take it to government. There are organizations now springing up in different states around the U.S. to ban corporate personhood in their state. Vermont, I'm from the state of Vermont, is one of those states that is doing that. It's going to pass legislation saying that no corporation can have the status of a person in the state of Vermont.
Yeah, that
think
is
about the Constitution. It's not we, the corporations of America. It's we, the people.
That movement has been going, and it seems like it is gaining momentum.
Mm-hmm. Well, anybody who's agitated about it, find one in your state and work for it. Volunteer. If there isn't one in your state, organize it. Go online and find the mothership of that movement. And figure out how you can create one in your state. The information is available. People are working on it. But it won't change unless we get up off our butt and do it.
So let me ask you, who inspires you to, how did you get inspired to start the work that you did?
Oh, I was a young, agitated woman in Vietnam wartime. I started protesting feebly against the war in Vietnam, and I kind of, here I am years later. Still protesting. But the people who inspire me today are all of the amazing people around the world who work tirelessly for a better world for themselves and others, and nobody knows who they are. They do it because they want a better world. They do it because they want a better world for their children, for themselves.
Can you give me an example of someone you know?
Well, I could say a name, but it wouldn't matter because you don't know her. You know what I mean?
Right.
There are women in Armenia that I esteem highly. There are women in Mexico who, you know, face death threats daily because of their trying to stop the femicide, the killing of women throughout Mexico, but especially in Ciudad Juarez on the border. There are women in Honduras who have been, you know, threatened terribly since the coup that Mr. Obama wishy-washied on instead of standing up against the coup. You know, sending a horrific signal to that region, which has suffered, you know, for ages. I worked in Nicaragua and El Salvador during the 80s, so seeing another coup at this point in time in the region is, you know, that Obama did not oppose vigorously is kind of agitating. But it's all of those kind of people that nobody knows, but they work every day. Some of them, one woman in Honduras in particular, because of her work, her sister was kidnapped.
Mm.
You know, shut her up. But it didn't work, and finally they were able to raise the ransom money and free her sister. But those are the people that inspire me every day.
So it sounds like you're a bit disappointed in Obama.
Yes, I am. But I honestly never saw him to be the great panacea, the great, you know, leader who was going to change this country. I always saw him, I'm sorry, as a Democrat from Chicago.
Right.
One of the most corrupt political, you know, cities in the country. Not that I think that necessarily makes him corrupt, but you don't get to be president by being Mr. Nice Guy in the United States today, I'm sorry. And I always wanted people to judge him by virtue of his political stance, not by virtue of the fact that he's the first black president, which I think is terrific. But that's not the standard by which you measure him. You measure him like any other president. Has he done what he said he was going to do? In my view, he has been wishy-washy on almost every issue.
Yeah. Okay, good morning, Francis.
Hi.
Hi, Francis.
I view our president as, right now, having to deal with a monster, and he's not getting much support to do that. And the monster to me is the international corporate gangsters who are probably very involved in what's happening in Libya right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about the money.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he is facing that pretty much on his own because our Congress is pretty weak. And I'm not sure what he can do. Now, what my concern in Libya is, you know, Muammar Gaddafi had what they call a bloodless coup in 1969.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, that country has flourished. Their sustainable development is outrageously great. He has not always been cooperative with the international gangsters. And my concern right now is the great man-made river that under his guide was constructed from aquifers that were located in the middle of the desert. And it has brought water to the coastline cities to where it's absolutely beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And my concern is the bombing is going to destroy the river. And I just have a feeling that some kind of way he's not cooperating. Now, I don't, as you said, we can't really pinpoint what that is, but I just feel that he is not going along with the program with the West. And so this is happening. I feel like the rebellions are perpetrated. And since when did we internationally go in and support a rebellion?
Well, we've fomented many.
And I'm wondering what would happen if somebody decided to do that here. I think they would be called terrorists.
I think you're correct. But the thing about what's happening in Libya is it's the people of Libya that have risen up against Mr. Gaddafi. I think it's their issue. I don't think it's the issue of the international community. I think they have the right to determine who should lead their country. And they were standing up in protest. That's, you know, my position.
But then that leaves the question open of if there was a group that was trying to overthrow the government, should the U.S. come in and help them?
My best answer would be thinking what Shirin Ebadi always says when she speaks to the international community. Or individual states, such as the U.S., she's written tons of op-eds here, that the people of Iran do not need external intervention to change the regime there. The people in Iran need, you know, moral support to continue their efforts to bring about change in their own country. But when others intervene, it causes a spike in human rights violations. It does not help. I would apply that to every other situation. You know, that the people themselves have to have the space to force change in their own country. I support Shireen's view.
Okay.
So we can apply that to Libya or Burma or wherever.
Or here in the United States.
Exactly.
We need moral support to bring on change. Okay, and coming up this morning on KBOO, at 9 o'clock is Voices of the Middle East. The guests, an Oregon student who visited her father's homeland of Libya. She talks about anti-government rallies, protests, and actions there. And journalist Pepe Escobar talks about Libya and his latest articles on Saudi Arabia and Bahrain. So stay tuned, and there'll be more information about what's really going on in Libya. At 10 o'clock, Air Cascadia has headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoint features more on nuclear safety issues in light of yesterday's quake in Japan. At 11 o'clock, it's the Digital Divide, analyzing how to use science, medicine, and technology to benefit society and keep it from harming us. And thanks, KBOO members, for your support. You know, if you're not a KBOO member, you can become one right now by going to kboo.fm and clicking on the tip jar. And this is Talk Radio. I'm Marianne Barasonic, and my guest is Jody Williams, who received the Nobel Peace Prize for her work on banning international the international campaign to ban landmines. And the number to call is 503-231-8187. We've been talking about when it is appropriate to intervene in another country's internal issues. And it seems like every time that the U.S. intervenes, it's not because they're doing it on behalf of the people in that country. It's because there's an agenda that will benefit the U.S. And as much as it seems like trying to help the rebels in Libya is a good idea, it, on the other hand, it, you know, as you said earlier, Jody, it was like we don't even know who these rebels are and what's going to be ushered in. But my guess is that we're going to see another dictatorship ushered in, but it'll be one that's more friendly towards, as the last caller said, the international gangsters.
I like the phraseology. That might well be the case. I hope, actually, though, that the people of Libya get to determine their own future.
Yeah. So the contest that Physicians for Social Responsibility sponsored, the question was, what do we need to change to create a world without nuclear weapons? And we kind of didn't get to discuss that. What do you think we need to change?
I think it's not just about creating a world free of nuclear weapons. I think it's about creating a different understanding of what makes us all secure. If we have a different understanding of that, then we don't need nuclear weapons. We don't need the new robotic weapons that are being, you know, researched and developed today. These are weapons that will be able to make decisions on their own without human beings to decide who to kill, when, where, and how.
Whoa,
now,
really?
Yeah. Oh,
this is a weapon system I haven't heard about. I know about the unmanned drones, but there's a human being controlling them.
The drones are, as many of the people in the R&D on these weapons refer to them, they're the Model T of future robotic weapons. We're going to keep having worse and worse weapons in this world unless and until we understand they do not bring us security. Look at the wars raging around the world. They're raging because there are, you know, disgusting weapons that make killing easier and because there are people willing to produce them and sell them because they make billions of dollars. And because in our schools and in our history books, war is glorified throughout the telling of our history.
But don't you think that a lot of the underpinnings is the financial system and the financial incentives that...
Sure.
And how do we change those?
I don't think that can happen overnight. Well, one way is dealing with the budget, for example. As I was saying earlier, I mean, it's appalling that people sit back and think it's okay that we spend more than half of our disposable income on weapons and the military when we can't educate our kids.
But I think so many people are kind of overwhelmed because they're trying to get by. They're having a hard time.
You know something? They'd get by better if they went and protested the damn budget that is more than happy to keep feeding the military and feeding the weapons producers instead of feeding the hungry in our country, instead of educating the children of our country. That affects them daily in every aspect of their lives.
But you're not going to see the commentators on Fox News getting out there saying, we need to get people out into the streets to cut the military.
Yeah, but it doesn't take all that many. I mean, when you think about landmines, they were used for almost a century by every fighting force in the world, and it was a handful of us that started the campaign and pushed enough people to get up and take action, and we did change the world. It can be done.
So I know the U.S. hasn't signed on to the landmine campaign. Has China?
No, it hasn't. But I believe if the U.S. were to sign, China would.
And Russia?
No. It was still using them in Chechnya until recently. I think those countries care about what the U.S. does. On the other hand, China, pretty early on, stopped producing landmines for export in recognition of the humanitarian danger that they cause. So they no longer produce them, they no longer export them. They felt pressure and they started contributing to the UN for international demining. They started training deminers. There has been change even in those countries that still have not signed. If the U.S. were to join, I think it would be the final push that brought them on board.
So if China is not building them for export, are they building them for keeping in China? Are they using them internally?
They have a huge stockpile. I don't think they've had to build them recently. You know, they've used them along some of their borders, which is what most countries say that keep them say they need them for, you know, defending the borders.
Yeah. Now, are the cluster bombs the same in the same category as the landmine, or is that kind of considered a completely different issue?
Well, it's considered a different weapon. It is a different weapon, but when cluster bomblets don't blow up on, you know, when they hit something as they're supposed to, they become like a gigantic landmine, gigantic in the sense of the force of the blast. There is a new treaty banning cluster munitions. It was finalized in Norway in 2008. And it was, again, civil society that pushed governments to make that happen. The Cluster Munition Coalition pushed and pushed and pushed, and then finally they got, you know, a lead champion in the government of Norway. They negotiated a treaty just like the landmine treaty, you know, and we did it under the leadership of Canada. So it's been done before, it's been done again, and it can happen again.
Okay. And one more reminder to our listeners, Jody Williams will be here, and she'll be delivering the keynote address at the Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility's 30th anniversary dinner. And if you call into the station, we can give you specifics on that. And Concordia University on the 14th at 7 p.m. And Jody, thank you so much for...
Thank you. It's been fun.
Okay.
All right. Hope I see you out in Portland.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.